ಗೋವಿಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ್ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ್ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಅಂಡ್ ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ಬಿಗಿನ್ ದಿ ಫೋರ್ತ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ. ದ ಫೋರ್ತ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಈಸ್ ದ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ವೇರ್ three concepts are introduced. If you want to know what is the purpose of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and why the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, you must understand the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita brings out three important concepts. The first and the most important concept in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is that the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, is none other than the Supreme Lord. This is the first and most important concept. If you do not accept Krishna to be God, then you are wasting your time with Bhagavad Gita. Because in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly says that He is God. And if you cannot accept Him as God, then anyone who says he is God and you don't accept him as God is a fraud and an imposter. And therefore, whatever he says cannot be depended upon. So, to understand Bhagavad Gita, we must understand that the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita clearly declares himself to be the supreme, all-pervading, inconceivable, unmanifest Lord in human form. Again, let me clarify. Krishna is not someone who has become God. Krishna is the supreme source of everybody and everything. You cannot become God, you can only realize that you are part of divinity. Krishna is the fountainhead, he is the source, he is the Godhead from where all things spring. And this is what he makes very clear in this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So if you attend any lectures on Bhagavad Gita where they say that yes, Krishna is not God, he is a human being who has acquired great yogic powers, then they have not understood fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Even if he is speaking lectures on Bhagavad Gita, he has definitely not understood who Krishna is, and therefore he has not understood Bhagavad Gita. Further, if you come across other speakers in Bhagavad Gita who very clearly say that you can also become like Krishna, then once again they have not understood what Bhagavad Gita is saying. So let us be very clear that one of the important concepts that is introduced in the Bhagavad Gita fourth chapter is that Krishna is the all-pervading, inconceivable, unmanifest, Supreme Lord without any equal who has appeared in a spiritual form which appears human. This is what the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita reveals. Having revealed this, Krishna now goes on to explain what is yajna, what is sacrifice, what are different forms of sacrifice? How are different forms of sacrifice performed? So if the first point that is demonstrated and illustrated in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna is God, the second important principle is what is yajna? What is sacrifice? What are the various forms of sacrifice that are performed? How does one perform these forms of sacrifice? All this is described as the second important concept in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, as we go on to the chapter, I will explain to you in greater detail. But it's important for you to understand that sacrifice is the way by which we acquire spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge, as I've always been telling you, is not acquired through acquisition. You do not acquire spiritual knowledge by going out and getting spiritual knowledge. You cannot go to a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita and then acquire knowledge of what the Bhagavad Gita contains. At the most, you will only get some theoretical understanding of Bhagavad Gita, but what knowledge, what divine knowledge that is contained in Bhagavad Gita, you cannot acquire simply by taking notes, going to lecture after lecture. This is not acquired knowledge. You cannot get hold of it. I know somebody who, every time somebody is giving lecture on Bhagavad Gita, they run to attend a lecture. It doesn't matter who is giving, right? As long as the person is speaking on Bhagavad Gita, and if it is not too boring and entertaining enough, and there are a few jokes thrown in so you can enjoy yourself, they will go for that lecture on Bhagavad Gita, because they feel that by attending more and more lectures on Bhagavad Gita, they will acquire knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. They keep detailed and profound notes, they do this, they do that, they read Bhagavad Gita, but Bhagavad Gita's knowledge is not acquired in this way. Others believe that by learning Bhagavad Gita by heart, they will acquire knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So I know many people who have learned Bhagavad Gita by heart, and they can recite Bhagavad Gita anywhere, anytime. You quote 3 verses, tell them this is the verse, tell me 4 verses before that, they will recite it. You tell them 11 verses after that, they will be able to recite it. This is how they know Bhagavad Gita. However, that is not spiritual knowledge. That is not spiritual knowledge. The knowledge or transcendental knowledge that Krishna speaks of here in the Bhagavad Gita is the third important concept that is illustrated in this chapter. And this knowledge or this transcendental knowledge which Krishna reveals in this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is that knowledge is not acquired, it is a process of divestiture, it is a process of giving up. It is not the process of taking up, it is the process of giving up. It is not the process of acquiring notes, it is not the process of acquiring ideas or concepts, it is not the process of thinking that you can learn it by heart and therefore you know it. The process of getting transcendental knowledge is about shedding everything that has to do with your limited, petty ego and self. When you can give up all concepts of yourself, when you can give up all ahankar, you can give up all concepts of self, you can give up all ego, you can give up all ideas of what you think you are, you can give up all the emotional baggage of the past. When you can become nothing, when you can become nothing who knows nothing, then you have acquired spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is the process of becoming a nobody who knows nothing. If you become a nobody who knows nothing, then you have understood what transcendental knowledge is. Because the process of transcendental knowledge is the process of emptying yourself. It is a process of emptying yourself of everything. Not filling yourself with knowledge of Bhagavad Gita or verses or Sanskrit or whatever. It is a process of emptying yourself of everything so that when you are nothing, then God can make you anything. This is a very important principle. Please remember it. I would suggest that you engrave it in gold and hang it around your neck. When you become nothing, God can make you anything. When the flute, if Krishna takes up a wooden twig or he picks up a branch, he cannot play any music through it. But when that twig or that branch has been emptied, when it has been made into a flute, then Krishna can play the tune that he desires. So also you and me, we are full of ourselves. We are full of whom we think we are. We are all full of all the concepts and ideas we have gathered in our life. We are full of all the emotional baggage of the past. We are full of opinions and ideas. We are quick to criticize and judge. And we are quick to understand, this is not for me, that is not for me, I don't like this, I don't like that, I, me, mine. And as long as we are full of all this garbage, we cannot acquire transcendental knowledge. When we learn to abandon everything that lies inside of ourselves and become nothing, when you can even give up all ideas and concepts of all dharmas that you have been taught, not only the bad but also the good. Don't think that I have to give up the bad things and I have to hold on to the good things. No, giving up and emptying yourself means emptying yourself of everything. Emptying yourself not only of the bad but also of the good. When you are completely empty, when you are nobody who knows nothing about anything, then you are ready to be situated on the transcendental plane, and then God grants you divine transcendental knowledge and wisdom. Sarvadharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami masuccha. Just abandon everything, everything that you've got, what ideas you have of yourself, I, me, mine, this is what I've learned, this is what I've become, this is my intelligence, this is my beauty, this is my knowledge, this is my aristocratic position in society, this is my status. When everything is gone and you have become nothing, that is the stage when you are now available to be filled with transcendental knowledge. So this concept is also brought out. What is transcendental knowledge? This is the third concept of the Bhagavad Gita. And that transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is such that that knowledge makes you aware. Yaj jnyatvana punar moham evam yasyasi pandava. That when you have learned the truth, you will know. What will you know? That all beings are in me. They are part of me and they are mine. So, that knowledge, when you become empty, then only you can understand the connectedness of everything. When you become empty, only then you can see things as they are. When you remove your dark glasses, only then you can see what is there before your face. But as long as you are looking through a dark glass, as long as you are looking through something, you are not seeing things as they are. You are merely seeing what you are placing before the object of your vision. So these are the three important concepts that are brought out in this Bhagavad Gita chapter 4. The first is that God is Krishna, the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. He is nowhere like you. You are an infinitesimal creature. He is an infinite creature. Although he has a human form, he simultaneously pervades the universe. Even though he appears to have a form, he is at the same time completely inconceivable and unmanifest. All this is revealed in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And the way to acquire spiritual knowledge is to empty yourself of everything. And the way to empty yourself of everything is to do things that are not for self. This is what sacrifice means. Sacrifice means to perform acts that are not for self. Every time you perform a selfish act, you are increasing your delusion and your ignorance. Every time you perform an act that is connected to self, you are binding yourself to karma. And every time you forget yourself, you are coming closer to God. To perform sacrifice means to perform acts which are not for self. When we learn to perform acts which are not for self, they help to attenuate the ego. They help to weaken the self-concept. They help to surrender the ahankar. They help you to remember God and forget yourself. They help you, acts of sacrifice help you to empty yourself and become nothing so that God can play on you as He plays on His flute. And He can play the tune that He chooses, not what you choose. And this process of emptying yourself through yajna leads to transcendental knowledge. So this is it. God is Krishna. The realization of God, that He controls everything, He contains everything, that all of us are within Him and part of Him, is transcendental knowledge. And what keeps us from this realization is our ego and our sense of self. Yajna is the means by which we lose this ego and sense of self, by which we empty ourselves by performing acts for not self, and therefore it is the means by which we connect with God and by emptying ourselves become filled with transcendental knowledge and wisdom. This in essence is what the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is about. And with this introduction, I will go on to discussing the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Imam Vivashvate Yogam, Proktavan Aham Avyayam, Vivashvan Manave Praha, Manur Iksh Vakave Bravit, Evam Parampara Praptam, Imam Rajarishyo Vidu, Sa Kale Nahi Mahata, Yogo Nashta Parantapaha. Sa Evayam Mayate Adya, Yogaha Propta Puranata Puratanaha, Bhakto Asime Sakha Cheti, Rahasyam Hi Etad Uttamam. Arjuna Vacha, Aparam Bhavato Janma, Param Janma Vivashvataha, Katham etad vijaniyam tvam adav proktavan iti. Krishna begins by saying that this knowledge which I am about to give you, or this information that I am about to give you, I have actually given this information before. This is not the first time that I am speaking to you. Although I am speaking the Bhagavad Gita to you, Arjun, this is not the first time this knowledge has been given. In fact, this entire science that I am giving you in this Gita was first spoken to the sun god Vivashvan. And Vivashvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed Ikshvaku. So Krishna is saying that yes, I am speaking the Bhagavad Gita now. Yes, it might appear strange to you, but do not think that I am giving you some new philosophy. This philosophy is a very ancient philosophy which I gave at the beginning of time to the sun god, Vivashvan. And he in turn gave this knowledge to the father of mankind, Manu. And Manu, he in turn instructed Ikshvaku. Though he says that this science was transmitted by word of mouth from guru to disciple in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. But unfortunately, in the course of time, this chain has been broken. And therefore, the science that I instructed appears to be lost. And I am now giving you the same lost knowledge to you because you are my devotee and you are my friend. And you will therefore understand the transcendental mystery behind this science and philosophy. See, we have to understand that, you know, in Hindu culture, we respect tradition. And traditional knowledge is real knowledge. You see, every day new gurus, new paths, new philosophies, they come and they go. But the traditional philosophies that have been existing from the beginning of time and that are carried on by tradition, these remain ever strong and eternal. Krishna is now telling Arjun that don't think that I have come to give you some pop philosophy. I have not come to give you some pop philosophy that you can spout at a cocktail party. I have come to give you an ancient knowledge which has been given at the beginning of time to the sun god Vivashvan. And this knowledge which is given from the beginning of time has been passed down by word of mouth until it finally got lost because of a break in the disciplic succession. See, we'll see as we go on in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna has great emphasis on following Shastra. He has great emphasis on following the rules and regulations of scripture. And let me explain to you that this scripture is of two types. It is called Shruti and it is called Smriti. Shruti means that ancient knowledge and philosophy that is eternal and beyond time and place and circumstance. And it was given at the time of creation by the Lord Himself. And just like when you go, now Diwali season is approaching, some people like to buy white goods, television sets, microwave ovens, various things at Diwali time. And if you should decide to buy your fridge or your TV or whatever at Diwali time, when you buy that item, you will see that with it you will get an instruction book. He'll give you a guarantee card and he'll give you an instruction book. That instruction book will tell you how to operate this microwave or how to operate this DVD player or how to operate this television set. It will be an instruction manual. Similarly, our Vedas are an instruction manual given by the Lord at the beginning of time. When this world and creation was given to us, at the same time we were given an instruction manual on how to live. And that was the Vedic scripture. You see, any other religion, all other religions begin with a prophet. They'll say, okay, this prophet, he started our religion. Or this prophet, he was revealed this message by God. Or this prophet, this message was revealed to him by the angels. Or this prophet, he created this religion. But Hindu religion does not begin with a prophet. Hindu religion does not begin with a person. Hindu religion begins with creation. Because at the time of creation, no prophet, but God Himself gave these transcendental scriptures. And these transcendental scriptures were passed on by word of mouth. From guru to disciple, from father to son. Until 5,000 years ago, Ved Vyas himself, realizing that memories were short and knowledge was being lost and corrupted, he compiled all these things into what we call the Vedas. Ved Vyas simply means editor of the Vedas. When you say editor of so and so newspaper, it's not the name of the person. Okay? You say editor Times of India. That's the editor Times of India. It keeps changing from time to time. Here also he says Ved Vyas. His name is not important. He is the editor of the Vedas. He has put the Vedas which were Shruti. Shruti means what you hear. Because no one put it down in writing. It was spoken by word of mouth from guru to disciple, from father to son. And 5,000 years ago, Ved Vyas, realizing that human memory was short, he put it down in writing. Many times people say, "Arre chalve, kya bol raha hai yaar, doctor? Let's talk little sense. Kya? God ne bola, phir usne kisi ko bataya bataya. Sab kahani hai, don't tell me all these things. Okay? Tell me something that's scientific, knowledgeable, rational, reasonable. I don't accept all this rubbish. Well, you know, there's a very beautiful statement in the Ten Commandments, which I would like you to know. In those Ten Commandments, one important, maybe one day I'll show you Ten Commandments, one more movie you can see, right? Soon we'll have to convert this into a movie theater, right? So, in the Ten Commandments he says, please note that you cannot break any of these Ten Commandments. You cannot break any of these Ten Commandments. You can only break yourself against these Ten Commandments. Please understand how powerful these words are. You cannot break these Ten Commandments. You can only break yourself against these Ten Commandments. That means these laws cannot be broken. The laws of God cannot be broken. You can only break yourself against the laws of God. To give you a very, many people think that laws of God and all, chalve, kya laws of God, we have, mera hi law chalta hai aajkal, whatever I say does, I do what I feel like doing, laws of God, I don't care. Well, my friend, I want freedom. You have to understand that laws are there to give you freedom. Many people feel that laws are there to restrict them, but the truth is laws are there to give you freedom. Suppose you have brought your car here to Prempuri Ashram and you are now planning to go home after the lecture, and somebody tells you the law says that you have to drive on the left side of the road, you have to stop when the traffic light is red, you have to observe these rules and regulations and traffic law. Hey, chal bhi kya law, I'll drive how I want, especially if you had a peg or two, and it doesn't matter, I will go on right side of the road, not on the left side of the road, I will go through traffic light. But what will happen? You will have an accident and you will be dead. Or you will have an accident and you will go to hospital. Or you will be arrested and you will go to jail. And what will happen? In all three cases, your freedom will be restricted. If you want the freedom to go home in comfort and safety, then you have to. So also, if you follow the law, when you are laws of God, you will have freedom and comfort and safety within this world and beyond this world. But if you choose to try to break the law, you will only break yourself against the law, and you will experience untold and unimaginable suffering in this life, in the next life, and in the interval between lives. So, don't believe, what can I say? If you don't believe, then don't believe, then you act according to your own whim and fancy, and you will understand what happens to you. In the same chapter he says, Agnascha Shraddhanascha Saushayatma Vinashyati Nayam Lokostino Parona Sukham Saushayatmana. Those who have no faith in the Shastra, or those who are ignorant of the Shastra, both of them cannot find happiness in this life or the next. Suppose somebody drives a car without following the rules of the law, without following any traffic regulations, he drives the car. Whether he is ignorant about the laws or whether he wants to flout the laws, it doesn't matter. Either way, he is penalized. This happened to me so many times, right? So I have taken a left turn and the cop has stopped me. And he says, why did you go through the red light? I said, I thought we have a free left turn here. He says, I don't care what you thought, you may have been ignorant or you may have been intentionally trying to break the law, I don't care, please give me your license and here is your ticket. This is what happens, you get penalized. Whether you have no faith and you want to disobey willfully the law, or even if you are ignorant about the law. He also says that yaha shastra vidhim utsrijaya vartate kamakarata na sa siddhim avapnoti na sukham na paramgati. One who disregards the scriptures and acts according to his own whim and fancy, he cannot find happiness, peace, or the supreme destination. This is a fact. If you disregard the instructions of the scriptures, you cannot find happiness, peace or the supreme destination. So, Shastra is important. And Shastra means Shruti, which you have heard from authority, which has come in disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarishyo vidduhu. So those who have heard in the right parampara, they get the right knowledge. And therefore, Krishna is emphasizing here the importance of parampara. He is emphasizing here the importance of Shastra. He is emphasizing here the importance that religion is not created. It is not concocted. It is not made by wise men. Many people say, oh, religion, it is a creation of wise men in order to subjugate other people. It's all wise men have sat together and written the scriptures to sab buddhu log jo hai na, unko line pe rakhne ke liye banaya hai. So this is all nonsense. They have to understand that scripture is not created by wise people, okay? This be created by God. And God, as He reveals this message, it has been put down finally. Otherwise it came by word of mouth, which is called Shruti. And Krishna here in the Bhagavad Gita is emphasizing, clarifying that this is not new. See, as far as divinity is concerned, as far as divine knowledge is concerned, nothing is new. Please understand this. Because somebody has found something new in spirituality, then that fellow who's found something new in spirituality is a con man. He is a con man. There is nothing new in spirituality. At the most, he might have taken some old thing, jumbled it about, put it in a new bottle and put his label on it, branded it and then tried to get some value for it. But it doesn't mean that it is new. Knowledge is ancient. It is timeless. It comes from God. The author of all spirituality is God Himself. And therefore God Himself is now saying that please note that I am not giving you something new. And Arjuna asked Him, that is, you are giving me some new knowledge in Bhagavad Gita? Pahle kyun nahi bataya tha humko? I made all these sins and all these problems and all, tumne pahle nahi bataya tha. Now you are telling me, now I realize what I did my whole life. He's saying, no boss, this I have given you before also, pehle bhi diya hai, lekin aap bhul chuke ho. All you people have forgotten what I have given, it has been lost. And therefore, seeing that it has been lost, I have come down. You'll see later in the Bhagavad Gita, he says. Why does he come onto this earth? Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamiham. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayach duskritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yoge yoge. Whenever there is a rise in irreligion, whenever there is a rise in ignorance, whenever people have forgotten the principles of religion, whenever people have forgotten the truth and they are manufacturing all kinds of concocted religions, at such times do I appear, I manifest myself. I deliver saintly people who are looking for the truth. I punish the evildoers. I reiterate the principles of religion. This is why he comes here on this earth. So Krishna, right in the beginning, is trying to tell us several things. What is he trying to tell us? Number one, he is God. Number two, this is not new knowledge, it is ancient knowledge. He has given it right at the beginning of time. Number three, that from time to time religious knowledge, wisdom, philosophy, realization processes are garbled and jumbled and lost, and therefore he comes to reveal the truth once again. When we were children, we used to play a game called Chinese Whispers, right? Where you whispered something in the ear of the person next to you and that person whispered in the ear of the person next, and by the time it reached the back of the room, that person was asked to say, what did you hear? And what he heard was completely different from what was said in the beginning. Right? So also, unfortunately, it is with religion. that God reveals religion to Vivashvan at the time of creation. And as it goes backwards, 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 backwards to modern days, somewhere along the road it gets garbled, mangled, and therefore what you get is a Chinese whisper. So Krishna is saying that when the Chinese whisper gets so distorted it makes no sense whatsoever, then he says, then I come, because it's about time to put you straight. It's about time for me to make you realize what the truth is. As I tried to tell you, to see the historical context in which the Bhagavad Gita was written, the Bhagavad Gita was written at a time when salvation-centered religions that demanded external renunciation had come to the fore. When the Bhagavad Gita was spoken and popularized, many, many religions had sprung up, and all of them demanded that you should give up your job, your profession, your work, your family, your society, and you should take to the path of external renunciation, and you should seek God and your personal salvation. And therefore, God appeared at that. On the other hand, there were people, as I said, who believed that religion was to enjoy better in this world, and they would perform all kinds of worldly religious rites in order to increase their enjoyment in this world, go to heaven and come back in a superior birth. So Krishna came to put things right. He came to put things straight. He came to make people understand what are the principles of real religion. And with this purpose and this important mission, that God appeared in an apparently human form, which, as we will see as we go on in the fourth chapter, is not really human in the sense, other than the fact that it appears human, it's not really human. Because within that same body which appears human, he contains the entire universe within it. We will be understanding all these things as we go ahead in the study of the Bhagavad Gita. So I'll stop here. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Yes, does anyone have any questions on this? So to summarize, I have given you an overview of the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter. The overview of the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, is very clear. It tells you, number one, that first concept is that Krishna is God. The second concept that is introduced here is the concept of yajna, the performance of acts that are not for self. Because by performing acts that are not for self, you attenuate your ego and you annihilate your sense of self, thereby preparing yourself to become nothing, to become a nobody who knows nothing. So at that moment, when you become nothing, God can make you anything, and He can fill you with transcendental knowledge. And this transcendental knowledge is the third concept which is introduced here. The third concept being transcendental knowledge is not knowledge that is acquired. It is not knowledge that is hoarded. It is not knowledge which is stored. But it is the process by which you give away, you drop behind, you leave, you abandon, you become detached from all ideas and concepts that you've held in your life, all ideas of sense of self, all emotional baggage, all hopes and dreams and fantasies, all ideas that you had about yourself, about anybody, about anything. When you truly become nothing, then you are a fit vessel for God to play His tune. So, this is what I, in summary, I taught you of the overview of the Bhagavad Gita. I also told you how Krishna is emphasizing in this first few verses of the Bhagavad Gita that knowledge is not new, it is ancient. Only it needs to be revived from time to time when people have forgotten. And Krishna comes as God to emphasize importance of traditional Shastra and adhering to traditional Shastra, because Shastra is what keeps us free and helps us to become free to return home to Him. Rules of scripture are not created by human beings, but they are created by God. They are not created for restriction and subjugation, but they are created for your salvation. They are created, in fact, for your deliverance. And to get peace, to become free, you need to follow the laws of Shastra. And Krishna is emphasizing here that he is not giving something new, he is only giving knowledge which has been given in the Shruti long ago, that is part of Shastra, but because this concept has been lost by the Chinese whispers that have taken place across generations, he has reappeared in an apparently human form in order to deliver it for the enlightenment of people, not just of Arjun but of all of you. So can we have the lights off, please? Please sit down with a broad base, shoulders back, spine and neck in a straight line. Capture the image of Krishna in your mind's eye, then shut your eyes and close your ears to all sound except the sound of my voice. Take a deep breath through your nostrils and leave it through those nostrils in a relaxed way. And let your natural breathing from your abdomen, not your chest, take over. Relax your body from the top of your head till the tips of your toes, until all the aches, all the pains, all the tiredness, all the negativity flows from your body into the ground. Feel the cool, dry air as it enters your nostrils, and feel the warm, moist air as it comes out onto your upper lip. Let your mantra ride your breath so that with each incoming breath and outgoing breath, the sound of Krishna's name echoes silently and yet loudly within your mind. Please slowly take a deep breath and gradually open your eyes. Please remain seated for the Aarti. Thank you. Om Jaya Jagad.